Hello, this is News Director Larissa Donovan, continuing my Meet the Candidates series, and joining me on the phone today is current incumbent for Minnesota House 5-8, John Purcell. How's it going today, John?
Very good, Larissa. Thank you. Good morning. And we'll enjoy talking again this morning. We get to talk with some regularity, so I'm happy for that.
Yeah, no, it's really great to get those updates from St. Paul as often as you've given me. But why don't we, in case people don't know a whole terrible lot about you, why don't you tell us a little bit of how long you've lived in this area?
Well, I came here back in the 70s when I got out of military service. My home base, I was in the Air Force, United States Air Force. My home base was Minot, North Dakota, which is, some may know, is if you get on Highway 2 and head west and eventually a little bit north, again, you'll end up going past Minot, North Dakota, or through that. And that's how I got here. I came down that Highway 2, and if the bypass would have been here at that time, I might not be here. as I came into Bemidji, come through here, and you know, used to come right through town, and I went past Bemidji State University, and I saw that sign, and the only thing I knew for sure, Larissa, was I wanted to use my GI Bill. I wanted to get some education, and so that's how I ended up here. And I served during Vietnam War, and was just happy to be here, and the community here was quite adoptive, I would say, a lot of friendly folks. And and then ended up, after I got my degree from BSU, I have a degree in biology and chemistry from Bemidji State University, a Bachelor of Science, and I was hired as a water quality planner by the Minnesota Chippewa Tribe in, I believe it was November, late October, early November of 1978. And I just started a small laboratory that developed into we got federally certified in 1983, and as a federally certified drinking water laboratory, and we did lake research. And back in those days, you may recall, maybe not, you're a fairly young lady, we were working for tribal government. We were working on the Bemidji sewer issue and the impacts that was having downstream on the Mississippi River, on Leech Lake Reservation and some of those lakes. So so we did a lot of, I was involved with a significant amount of water quality research, lake management plan development, that kind of thing. And we served, we were a small business, had 8 employees, and we served cities and counties, worked for lake associations throughout the Great Lakes State, so from Michigan over to the Dakotas. We had clients. So did that for 30 years, almost 30 years, 28, I believe, is the exact number, and went to work for the Leech Lake Tribe directly in 2006, and as a technical environmental policy analyst, a technical person, primarily regarding that St. Regis Superfund site over there in Cass Lake, trying to clean that up. And that's an hour conversation or more in and of itself, so I won't say much more about that. But then I officially retired in as a tribal government employee in March of 2019. I'm officially retired, but still doing some technical consulting for the Leech Lake Tribe.
All right, and I know this wouldn't be your first campaign. You've run several in the past. Remind me how many again.
yeah. Sorry, I didn't mention. I was first elected in 2008, and I'm serving in my 10th year right now. And that in 2016, I didn't get reelected, and then did get reelected in 2018. So, been on both sides of that ballot count, and being on the plus side is a lot more fun than on the other. And folks remember, and I've generated a somewhat of a nickname around some folks anyway. I'm Landslide. I won by 11 votes in 2018. And that's not the narrowest margin of victory for state representatives, mind you. It gets down into single digits for some folks, but that's a little closer than I'd like it to be. So I'm working on a bigger margin of victory here this time.
All right. Next question is: what are some of your accomplishments over the past biennium? And what would your goals be during the next biennium if reelected?
Sure. And, you know, some of these things just don't seem to go away. But we've certainly, in the last couple of years, is what I'm gonna tell you. In the last couple of years, we've made progress for both homeowners and renters regarding the tax structure, and we've been able to increase assistance for working families, supporting. We haven't made a lot of progress here, a little bit, but increase hourly wages for the hourly school employees, the education assistants, et cetera, assistant teachers, et cetera, in the schools, who do significant good work. Still on the hunt. We've made some progress on statewide broadband internet access, and that's really at the forefront of our, society here today, and in particular with education and distance education with the COVID virus that we're all dealing with. And, you know, you see in the news as well as I do that some parts of our state still don't have very good broadband access. We're very fortunate here in the Bemidji area. But if you get over in parts of, Leech Lake Indian Reservation, it's tough. And even up on the parts of the Iron Range, it's tough. Some students have to go to the end of their driveway or get out on a major highway and that kind of thing. So we need to improve that. No two ways about it. We did, and I'll just talk about something that we had some good progress here in the second special session. We've done three now, headed for four in September. Second special session, we did pass some police reform legislation, and that's been signed into law. It likely wasn't everything that everybody wanted. But it is an improvement, banning chokeholds, et cetera, trying to get assistance for police officers, peace officers, sheriffs, et cetera, deputies, when they need mental health assistance, because they do. They see a lot of stuff, and I have the medic in the service, and you see so much of that, the bad side, and, you know, people hurt and bleeding, et cetera, and it takes a toll on human beings. And healthcare workers, are, especially emergency workers, the same thing. You have to have access to whether it's peer counseling or other, you know, professional counseling, but to ensure that that's there for our peace officers. And remembering that peace officer job is one of the most dangerous, if not the most dangerous, in in the state and likely the country. But I tell the story, and it's not a story, it's a truth, but I think the day after, it was right at that George Floyd was murdered down there in Minneapolis, there was a police officer shot and killed serving a warrant at a door in Grand Forks. And I think it was the Dakota side of Grand Forks, but Ilburn Grand Forks anyway. And just that's how dangerous it is. You just don't know. And a deputy that was with that police officer was wounded. So it's you know, these police officers, men and women, are unsung heroes in my book. And we just, as all first responders, I have a stepson that's a firefighter over in a volunteer firefighter over in Cass Lake. So a lot of issues. I've got more, and I can mention them if you want, but I mean, I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about access to affordable health care. We've got more work to do there, obviously. You know, protecting seniors from abuse and neglect. We've got more to do there. So plenty of issues, roads and bridges, you know, a bonding bill for... We're hoping, I got my fingers crossed, we're going to get that bonding bill, you know, for Minnesota here. In our next special session, there's a significant piece of that bonding bill for Bemidji and the drinking water treatment plant that they must build and use. They're being mandated to have that drinking water plant because of the PFC pollution from that firefighter foam that got into the wells that are out there by the airport. So they don't have a choice. So hopefully we can get that done, and a lot of good projects around the state in that bonding bill.
All right. Well, I know it's really tough to summarize everything that the state legislature does because the issues are so broad and so many. But my next question is, as a legislator, you represent our area and expected to be our voice in St. Paul. What are some of the key issues your constituents have discussed with you?
Well, lately, I mean, there's, you know, I think folks get things out of the news for sure, and racial disparities. And that's an issue we need to address for sure. I believe there are some areas of that we're doing better than maybe other places. I know Bemidji had a recent open meeting. I wasn't able to be there, but regarding the police in Bemidji, and I know Police Chief Mike Masson, I had spoken with him, and he is... He's going to continue to try and do the right thing for the Bemidji area. But this is all over Minnesota, obviously, and the police reforms we put into place are going to help. But all in all, it takes some behavior changes on everybody's part to overcome racial disparities. And that's, you know, I worked for 41 years on Leech Lake Reservation, and I know more than just a little bit about how it can be the negatives that can be associated with being Native American, and we just need to continue to improve on that. And I know in our area here, and I've seen some news here lately with Beltrami County, and out-of-home placement for children has been a significant issue for, you know, decades. But there's been some improvement in that now. And that approach that, as I understand it, that's being used in trying to, you know, keep children in the home where they belong is a comprehensive approach, you know, working with the parents, trying to ensure that they have stability in their lives. And ordinarily, if that happens, then children are able to be more stable themselves, and it just works right up the ladder from there. If they have that stability, children can, and then they've got a chance to get the best education that they can. And we need to make sure that that's available for all of our children, the best education that we can give them. So there's been some good things going on too that we just have to keep working on. I mean, education funding is that every year I've been in the legislature, it's an issue. Shouldn't be, but it is, because the money for education comes from us taxpayers, and nobody wants to pay more taxes, but some years we have to raise taxes, and I want to make sure our tax system is fair. In my estimation, the wealthiest 1 or 2% of Minnesotans, and you could say this for the United States too, don't pay their fair share. They don't pay the same percentage of income tax that I do. And why not? So I think we've got work to do in our in our tax structure as well, and trying to keep property taxes down. Nobody likes that. I served on out east at Bemidji here, the Frone Township Board, for a couple of terms way back in the day, nearly 25 years ago. And that was always an issue, property taxes. And on the tax day when we set up a time in the evening when folks can come in and talk about their property taxes and how'd you get this number? So I know that is an issue, and it's an issue for anybody that's not well to do, and probably for those who are well to do also, but we need to make sure it's fair.
All right. My next question is a bit open-ended, so take all the time you need for this one. But what sort of values do you have that guide you in your decision-making?
Well, I fall back a lot on things that I've learned in my life, and I have the great advantage, as it were, maybe, of having parents that cared about me. My dad operated a small business, and I learned about that, and maybe that's part of why I went into a small business myself eventually. My dad was a WW2 vet, and I remember, I mean, when I was a kid, the WW2 vets were walking around, a lot of them homeless, trying to figure out what was going on with them. And my mother was a music teacher and taught music in K-12, but primarily in middle school, late grades in middle school. So there was music there, and I think I have a good background in what it takes to be a decent human being and respect others, and so I attribute that to my upbringing and my parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles, and my own experience, as I said, in the military, and what it takes to be a good soldier, a good airman. I was in the Air Force, so those are what I fall back on. And I'd be remiss if I didn't say that I learned an awful lot working for tribal government for 40 years too, and respect. You got to have respect for every person you see, and you're going to get tested out there, but you got to have respect. And that's a big part of, I believe, what what's going on with the racial disparities is we just don't have the respect we need for everybody. And you see somebody that looks different than you, you know, the first thing you think, gee, they look different than me. No, it's first thing should be, there's another human being, you know, and, you know, think that way. So anyway, that's a lot of where I come from and my value system. I also have a strong, sense of, protecting our Mother Earth and, water quality. And I mentioned I worked in those areas for some decades. And, so I'm a pretty strong environmental quality person, and, practice that. And that may be part of why I'm the current environment policy chair in the, of the House Environment Policy Committee, in the House of Representatives, realizing that we have to have, we've got to have jobs, but we can have jobs and still keep our environment clean so people want to come visit us, and remembering that tourism is a significant, I think about $15 billion a year industry in Minnesota, and we live right in the middle of that. So it's a significant part of our economy up here in northern Minnesota. And if one thing that we learned back in the 70s here with the sewage issues and et cetera, and you know, not have that we needed to upgrade the Bemidji sewer plant, and that did happen, thankfully, and I was proud to be part of that. But what happened downstream, some may remember, some may not, but down to Big Wolf Lake, that's the first natural lake downstream of Lake Bemidji on the Mississippi River. And the resorts on Big Wolf Lake back in the early 70s, late 60s, early 70s, had to put in swimming pools because people couldn't swim in the lake in the summer. It was too dirty, too much algae blooms. And that was a direct impact on, you know, they're spending big bucks to put in swimming pools. And so environmental quality is a significant part of who I am, too.
All right. Well, my next question is, many of us in greater Minnesota watch with some frustration as legislators seem to vote strictly along party lines. Would you vote in favor of items you and your constituents agree with, even if they're across the aisle?
Oh, yes. I've done that numerous times. And most legislation that is passed, including the police reform bill that we passed here 6-8 weeks ago, was bipartisan. I mean that the Senate, as you know, in Minnesota, the Minnesota Senate is led by Republicans, the House by Democrats, and the governor's a Democrat, and that it just had to be agreed upon. And I think the same thing will be with the bonding bill. There's going to be good things for all parts of our state. And I do think we'll be able to get it done. I have to point out that these times, and you know this as well as I do, Larissa, that in these times with this COVID-19 virus and you know, people being asked to stay home and wear masks if you're out in public, and it's just been really, really tough on a lot of businesses, especially businesses where people tend to congregate, restaurants and bars, et cetera. So it's put issues in front of us that most of us have not had to deal with before. I'm one that applauds our governor. I'm with the 65% that thinks he's doing a decent or a good job and how he's tackled this. But there are those primarily from the other side of the aisle who don't, from me, the other side of the aisle, who don't think that he's doing a good job or he should be. And I think you and I have talked about this a couple times in our conversations that that they think the House and Senate should be involved in these executive decisions regarding the COVID virus stuff. And I can't imagine that speaking of getting things done, that some of these things, we need to order more, more of these face masks. So we know we have enough for our hospitals, et cetera, and trying to get those. And that's become a state government issue because hospitals, et cetera, don't have enough buying power to get them themselves. So you have to put in this huge order. Well, I cannot imagine having to debate something like that on the House or Senate floor. It boggles my mind. So the governor needs to have that executive authority. Some don't think he does. I think that's misguided, that they're misguided in that thought process. But there's more that we do together than, the good news doesn't make as much news as bad news,
Yeah.
if there's a big fight going on in downtown Bemidji or something, that's going to make a lot of news. But if, people are gathering and singing hymns somewhere out on the street, that's, who's going to talk about that, I think there's plenty of room for improvement, and in the divisive politics that we find ourselves in, even in Minnesota, I find the current occupant of the White House to be quite divisive, and that's just his personality. That's who he is. I got to tell you, as a veteran, as a Vietnam vet, I think about how I'm going to say this. It does not make me feel good at all that he's one who avoided the draft numerous times, and he could have stepped up and served. And he didn't. I take what he says with a grain of salt. I believe the military men around him, and there's plenty of them that have left him because of his the way he approaches things. I believe that they're correct in what they're doing. But anyway, that makes it tough for all of us out here, and many of us took that oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and we're commencing to wonder what we've got in the White House currently. I am, and so that makes it more divisive than I've ever seen, and I served in the military during Richard Nixon, and that kind of turned out to be kind of divisive. You're too young to remember that, but anyway.
All right. Well, I just have time for one more question, one that's especially near and dear to my heart as a mom.
Okay.
But childcare is becoming incredibly difficult to find in this area, especially for infants, with the childcare issue being exacerbated in light of the COVID-19 pandemic. What are your ideas on how to address access to childcare?
Well, I think all options have to be on the table. And I have a daughter that operates an early childhood education center in Bemidji, and it's up through third grade. And so I know more than just a little bit about the issues, and I won't say I know everything that needs to be done to resolve them, but I think all options have to be on the table. There can be absolutely some state assistance for child care centers, and ensuring that when you and others are out there trying to put food on the table and make a living wage, that living wage includes that you can have your children in a safe place while you're out working trying to put food on the table. So I think all of the above. Let's have companies, et cetera, employers involved, and some employers set up child care centers in their place, you know, where their employees work. And some, I suppose, can't afford to do that, but having assistance perhaps for those, you know, for all child care assistance centers, whether they're home based or you know, center based, I think is the word that's used. It's all of the above. You know, you got to have enough wages if you're out there working to be able to pay somebody if you don't have an adult, a mom or a dad or a grandma or a grandpa that can take care of the kids. I mean, back in the day, that's the way it was, as you know, or one of the parents stayed home, one worked. I just think all of, you know, let's keep everything on the table, because there's no one solution that's going to fit everywhere for everybody. But if we, there are solutions. I'm absolutely convinced that there are solutions. And maybe it's, you know, I'm a big proponent of early childhood learning and early childhood education, as it were, and I think that can be part of it too. The sooner some of those kids get started, and it's not like you're going to put them into, I'm channeling my daughter here. It's not like you're putting them into, you're going to sit down, you're going to learn reading, writing, arithmetic here, you know, at 2-3 years old. No.
Social play, that's really important for those young kids, yeah.
Play-based, thank you. You took the words right out of my out of my mouth. It's play-based, and that's what my daughter emphasizes, and they do a good job with it. I run into people around Bemidji with some regularity. Oh yeah, my child goes to Dacia's. That's my daughter's name.
All right.
Dacia's Early Childhood Education Center, and just loves it. So those kind of things, and these could be, some of them could be within the school district, you know, at schools. But for those little young kids, 2, 3, 4 years old, you certainly have to have the play base there. It's not just about sending them to school. So,
well, that takes care of all my questions, but thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today. Mr. John Purcell for House 5A.